Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 lovies. Yeah. Is everyone still enjoying my Christmas festivities? I know I did. And I got my friend Everoy up in here. And I'm just so happy. I'm so ever so happy. Kaelin Parafin. Oh, Kaelin, I'm called Kaelin Kwan.
Oh, Kaelin.
Yes. People, be real talk, Midwest muscle.
In the house.
Huh? Kind of creepy at the end. Yeah. My bad. My bad. Well, anyway, this program is sponsored by People, be muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the world. And if you are a drug-free athlete and looking for a solid foundation to stand on, or a vehicle to drive your girls, like what that?
Like a Mack truck through chocolate cake, baby.
Oh, you went there. You went there. Deco salad, snicker through icing and frosting, a little glazed chili donut, love, and some cheesecake dreams, baby.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk. Hey, Des, how you doing?
Hey, Kaelin. Your accent tonight, it made me think of, what's it called? What's the guy called? Is he the Crumple? Or what's his name? Santa's ego, who goes around beating all the naughty children and stuffs them in his bag and carts them off. What is his name? Is it the Crumple?
Oh.
Somebody out there knows.
Krampus.
There it is. Not a Crumple. It's the Krampus. That's what I imagine. I imagine the Krampus sounds like either that or a naughty Australian. I'm not sure which one you're going for. But,
we can go with both.
My vote was for the Krampus.
Hey, it's better than the naughty Australian.
That sounds like it's going to be the number one Halloween costume in 2018. The naughty Australian.
It's naughty Australian. N-A. Okay, everybody likes the naughty Australian. I can only think about some hiked up shorts and maybe a shirt that's a little bit too open.
Yeah, he threw too many shrimps on the bobby. Happy holidays. I hope everyone had a wonderful Christmas wherever you were, with whomever you were with. And now you guys were just able to have a lot of peace and, you know, hopefully a lot of laughs and just a lot of love through
good
it
luck,
all. So
everybody.
Happy holidays. And, you know, the New Year's is coming up, so if you're planning to party, which I'm sure many of you are, always already be getting your backup plan in place on how you're getting home to wherever you're partying to. So I'm going to go throw it out there way in advance. That's right. Either Uber it or whoever is going to be your designated driver, or if you're hosting at your house, already have those plans in place how you're going to get home safely and responsibly. That's my PSA. or the naughty Australian is going to be on your door.
Hey, stop it. There's something like that.
All right, folks, so if you remember, last week we had Crystal Woods with us on Thursday prior to heading into the holiday weekend, and we had lots of questions still left on the docket that we weren't able to ask because we simply ran out of time. And so Crystal has so graciously agreed to join us again tonight. So welcome, Crystal. And even though you introduced yourself last Thursday, I know we have new listeners on tonight. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself again for our newbies. And it'll also be a refresher for our folks that listen on a regular.
Well,
okay, hold on,
Chris,
before you
back.
Start.
Oh.
Hold on, Crystal. Hold on. Shout out to the East Coast. They're checking in on a girl. You go, Crystal, and we got your back.
Aw.
I had to say it. They wanted you to know that.
East Coast groupies.
That's very sweet.
East Coast groupies.
That is very
I'm not
sweet.
Kidding. All right. East Coast groupies. You guys really called yourself that. Okay. We'll go with that. All right, Chris, go ahead.
After all right, well, thank you for having me
yeah.
back. I hope you guys had a wonderful holiday. I hope everyone listening had a wonderful holiday. So I am Crystal Woods. I work full-time with special needs children for the last 16 years in dentistry. I'm a bikini pro with multiple organizations. I run a contest prep with my boyfriend. And I'm a mother of two young adults and aspiring author and ANBF board member. So I kind of do a little bit of everything.
Wow.
And that's my lot.
Yes, it is. I'm just blown away that some of the group would call themselves East Coast Groupie. That's that's yeah, I thought the Australian whatever dance called me was, yeah, I've been upstage right now.
That's right. So now the Australian,
yeah,
let's
I
not
got
forget.
No word.
I think that's going to be our next hashtag, the next contest we have. You guys are going to, instead of the hashtag O'Kellen, you're going to have to hashtag Naughty Australian in order to be considered for the drawing. We don't have
oh
one
my.
Yet,
oh, yeah.
But when we do, I've already got the hashtag picked out, so I hope you guys are paying attention. You'll be ahead of the game.
I don't even want to know. I don't even want to know. This is crazy.
That's
well,
awesome.
Well, Chris, yes. I don't even know how to start the show now. I mean, why? Yeah, that's, wow. Yeah.
Well, it's nice
all
to
right.
know you have a following. I told you, you're pretty popular. I'm yeah. So, you know, thanks, guys, for chiming in so early and making sure I said it before we went anywhere else on this show. And thankfully you did that because, you know, we are going to be talking about some more in-depth things, and a lot of you guys had a lot of questions about one of her posts, and I think you have more followers on Instagram than Facebook, Crystal, because a lot of them saw that, and they screenshot that post that you did on Instagram, and, you know, you were being very open about what was going on, and so we're going to start with that, and then basically we'll let you introduce what you put. And we'll basically take questions from that because I know that's the direction that this show's going in.
Okay.
So I think what he's asking
yeah.
is, why don't you go ahead and just give us a recap of what you were talking about in that particular post. And I know it had to deal with, it was pertaining to your childhood. So if you can kind of just give us an overview of what you were saying, or even if you want to read the post as it was, if you have it in front of you, and then that way that'll bring the rest of our listeners up to speed to the point where we left off with the questions from your last interview.
So I believe the post you're referencing is the one where I gave statistics on child abuse.
Yes.
So I was abused as a child. I was kidnapped at the age of 6. From my mother. My parents had gotten divorced. My father had visitation, and he kidnapped me on one of his weekends. We went to Texas, and, you know, I'm at a young age, and you're with your father. You don't think anything of it, and you're brainwashed at a very early age and told that if you say anything that, you know, you're going to go to a place that's scary and you're never going to see anybody that you know and love again. So things that start to happen that you may feel uncomfortable with or you think aren't really right, you don't say anything. So my emotional and mental abuse started at the age of 6, immediately, as soon as I was kidnapped, actually even before that, because he was pretty scary and abusive with my mother toward the end. But right after my kidnapping, the sexual abuse started. And it continued until I was 15. And basically the where that ultimately ended, or the beginning of the end, I should say, is I was 15 years old. and he was leaving for coffee one day, and he kind of gave me, a deal. He said, hey, if you have sex with me 2 or 3 days a week, I'll let you come and go as you please. And I kindly told him to, I don't know if I can curse, but I told him to F off. And he said that if I was there when he got back, he would shoot me. So I left. Let me get this straight.
So you were kidnapped when you were 6. Were you missing from the ages of 6 to 15, or you made it back to your mom's house, but he still had visitation, or how did
No. So
okay.
laws and things were much different back then. We went to Texas at the age of 6, and when I was about, I would say probably 9 or 10, we came back to Arizona. Now, my understanding of it is he did turn himself in, and he gave them some kind of story about him being sick and whatever. I don't know all the details of that. I just know that he was never put in jail for my kidnapping, and I was never returned to my mother. So I was still with him, and at this point, I don't know where my mother was. I had no way of contacting my mother. So I was with my father from the age of 6 until I was 15. I ran away. I left. I wasn't there when he got back. And he searched for me and reported me as a runaway. And I ended up getting caught and taken back to him. And they thought I was just a teenager that wanted to be with her little boyfriend, so they didn't think anything of what I had told them, and they took me back to him. He held me at gunpoint overnight, and he was turning me into, juvie. And I was terrified of juvenile hall because of the stories that I had heard. And the devil you know is sometimes better than the devil you don't. So
yes.
I shed some crocodile tears so that he wouldn't put me in juvie. And I spent another year under his roof until he went to prison for pulling a gun on the boy that was hiding me at the time. And then I kind of became a ward of the court after that. So there's a ton of stuff in between there, a lot of, physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse, different instances, situations. I'm currently trying to write my memoir so that I can have them published. I believe my purpose in life has always been to help others with it. Nobody ever wanted me to write the book before, so I didn't. But the point of my story is I am willing to talk about it, and a lot of people are not. They don't want to put their name to it. They don't want to put their face to it because it's a dirty little secret and people are ashamed of it. I am not. It wasn't my choice. It wasn't within my control. And it was my path in life that I had to endure it so that I could help others that have been through it so that they can realize they can still have wonderful lives that are productive and fulfilling and loving, and that you can still have a healthy sex life, that you can still be all that you want to be, and that you don't have to succumb to the tragedies in your life, and that you don't have to, most importantly, continue the cycle. So that's just a little of what I went through. That's pretty broad strokes.
Well, there's a lot in those broad strokes for sure. And, as Kaylin is saying, wow, I mean, that's really the only word that I have. So I'm not even going to try to put words to what my thoughts are right now. But I know that our listeners already have questions. So I want to go ahead and start to address those because I know that we'll run out of time. And then perhaps along the way, this will come more into focus for me, even just trying to absorb just a little bit that you've shared. Our first question is from Linda. And she is wondering if there is long-term emotional scarring, if you're dealing with that.
Me personally, you can't say that it doesn't help to mold who you are. I've never gone through counseling. I don't feel that I personally ever needed it. I handled my abuse very well. And I attribute a lot of that to the fact that I realized very, very early on that forgiveness was the biggest key. So I forgave my father. And we sat down and we had a conversation, and I told him he stole my childhood, that he took my mother. And I just said everything that I ever needed to say. And then I told him that I forgave him. And, you know, I have faith. I'm not a religious person per se, but I have faith. And I gave all of that hate and that anger and that bitterness back to where it came from. And it released me.
There you go.
And I didn't just forgive him in words. I also forgave him in action, because he was present at the hospital when I gave birth to my son. And that's the biggest thing that you could do, is to allow someone to be a part of something so special and intimate and important to you as, you know, your child. So he was at the hospital with other family members. And that gave me my struggle with emotional. No, not in the respect that a lot of people may think. It has affected and helped to mold who I am and how I think and what I believe and how I view the world. Yes.
All right. Well, and we had a lot of people that were wondering that as well. Kevin just happened to be one of them that had asked if you had forgiven your dad or if you still had some pent-up anger. So hopefully that answers your question, Kevin. And you've got a lot of folks chiming in, several well wishes, even more people are, you know, I think still in kind of a state of disbelief of what you shared, and even a little bit you shared, and I think I was probably one of them. I mean, I got the gist of what happened from your post, and I think I was even a little taken aback from then, but I didn't even think it was to the degree that you just explained. I almost feel like, you know, you were kind of a Johnny Gosh, except you, I don't know. I mean, I guess what I'm really appalled, I mean, I am appalled. I'll just say that. I'm appalled at your father's behavior, but I'm also appalled at the system just totally failed you. First of all, you're a six-year-old that's gone. I guess it's just my understanding, and I don't need the whole explanation of what happened in between there, but you're gone for several years, and then you escape, you tell the authorities the truth, and they take you back to the person who was harming you. And that, I'm just angry at that as well. I mean, and I realize it was a different time and things have been elevated and heightened in awareness and all of that this day and age, but there's still a lot of that same type of behavior, I think, that happens, and it just shouldn't. And I'm feeling sorry for you because that happened and they didn't believe you, and anger. I mean, just a whole wealth of emotions, and I'm going to stop talking now, but my gosh, woman, I mean,
the system is very, very broken. When he kidnapped me, he assumed aliases for us both. And I assume that back then you still required documentation to put a child in school. I still attended school, but under a different name. So I was taught to answer to the name Sandy Riggs. I knew full well my name was Crystal, but I was not to answer to that name. So I went to school under a different name. He had a different name. And I don't know how that happened, but the system is most definitely broken. Children embellish sometimes, or they just completely get the story wrong. But this, you know, children are not fully listened to, and people don't pay attention. And it needs to change. Signs aren't looked for. People don't want to get involved. And it really does need to change. And we need to teach our children it's okay to speak. It's okay to talk, that just because you speak and you know, there may be some things that happen, you know, because they might they might view the police coming and somebody getting into trouble as their fault. No, we need to teach our children differently. It's what they're raised to believe is right and what's not. I was brainwashed into thinking that something horrible was going to happen, and I wasn't educated prior to that. There was no need. Nobody, you know, thought anything. In this world today, you have to, and that's one of the things that my past has taught me and my abuse has taught me in how to view the world. We don't wait for something bad to happen to teach our children. We need to teach our children now, because this world is not a nice place. So if we give them the tools that they need now, they will be prepared if and when something tragic starts to happen. It can be stopped before too much damage is done.
Yes, yes, I would agree with that. Next question, and I realize even in asking this, you were very young and then fed a lot of misinformation and led to believe things that weren't truth. So we get that. But in your opinion, Dave wants to know, do you think what most of what your father was doing was somehow a move to control your mother and hurt her at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. So he kidnapped me at 6. They had got divorced. He definitely kidnapped me to hurt her. But I think one of the reasons why he took me and why he started abusing me, one, well, he was just a sick SOB, because I wasn't the first child that he ever hurt. But was also because I ended up taking the place of my mother. I'm the spitting image of her. So I think he kind of transferred his feelings for her and his loss to me. So he had me, he still had a piece of her. And he used to tell me all the time when he was abusing me, he would tell me, "This is how I show you I love you." Now, of course, right. So, of course, you know, that's not love. And even at a young age, I knew that wasn't love. And I was older when he started saying these things to me. So the only reason all of that continued, I was scared. I was scared of him. He slept with a gun under his pillow. I knew how to fire a weapon, but I was too scared to ever reach for it, although many a night I did contemplate it. But I knew if I reached for the gun, he would catch me and shoot me. So I never did it. He ended up going to jail, and that was my saving grace.
Wow. I mean, he's a sick individual. I hope to God he's come to some realization of the damage he's done. And, I mean, the listeners, as well as Des and I, are just blown away. And you know, obviously, and I'm very thankful to know that you got past this, because it can be very mentally destructive, very mentally disruptive, and, you know, it can have so many ramifications that most people don't even want to address, because, you know, when you talk about the mental aspects of suffering, because it's not seen, a lot of people don't like to address it because it's something you can hide away. And I'm sure...
Well, it's considered a dirty little secret.
Yes, that's what I wanted you to go ahead and talk about, please. Because, like you said, if you're going to be reaching out, because it's not easy.
No, it's not. A lot of times, because we think we're going to be judged, and we don't want to be, you know, looked at and whispered behind our backs and things like that. I've never had that problem. I've never, and I guess that's part of what my abuse, that's how what I took from it. I try to tell anybody I come in contact with that's been through horrific events, we can't change it. and we can't take it back and we can't wish it away. So what we have to do is we have to take it and we have to find a silver lining in it. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, my God, what kind of silver lining can you find in that? There are silver linings. It makes you stronger. Even if you feel weak, it does make you stronger. Any tragic event, not just abuse, but any tragic event, it makes you stronger. And it's made me a more cautious human being. And while some people might find that a fault, in this day and age, I find it an asset. I don't trust people when I meet them. They have to earn my trust. Usually it's the other way around. It hasn't made me a perfect parent, but it's made me a more cautious parent. And my silver lining in it also is that it's my purpose and path in life. So, again, I had to go through it because I am very open about it. I always have been. And I truly, 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 with all my heart, believe that's why I emotionally and mentally handled it so well. I've never been ashamed of it or closed off about it. And I would urge anybody who is going through it or has gone through it, you don't just have to be a child going through it. If you were an adult currently going through some kind of abusive relationship,
yes,
or you were a child that went through it, if you can open up about it and just let all that venom out and just the poison, it will eat you alive. And if you have the ability to forgive the person who trespassed against you, you're not forgiving them for them. You're forgiving them for you. Their continued abuse is your mental anguish and your emotional destruction. So if you can forgive them, and everybody has to find that in their own time, in their own way. You can't make somebody forgive. But if they can find that and give it back for them, that's when the healing is just, it's amazing how much it just takes off of your heart and your soul just to be able to say, you know what, I don't forget, but I forgive. And it's gone. And you can move forward.
Yes. Oh,
yes.
My goodness, yes.
Oh, my God.
Go ahead.
So, all right, so, and I agree. And even in just running through thoughts in my own head, I mean, I know that the forgiveness part of it is what we are called to do. And I, you know, am just praising the Lord that you've been able to do that. Because even in my own mind, and I'm thinking about this as a mother, not as an individual that it would actually happen to, but I would just, you know, I would have Harry Caray on my mind. I mean, really, prison wouldn't have been good enough for the individual that would have done this to someone that I love.
Speaking as a mother, I have a completely different outlook on it. as a mother, God help you. But as the person that it happened to, that's different. You know, I don't
even. Even so, you've been able to do what many more are trying to do or were never successful in ever doing. And so it's still just a grand reminder and example of, like, as you said, for yourself, of what you can should try to strive for in having that peace for yourself. I mean, and that really is the truth. Anytime forgiving anybody for any reason, it's more about what that means for you than it is for them, because you could forgive them and they could still go on being the evil people that they were. So it's more about you and letting that go. And, you know, as scripture says, you have to forgive in order to truly be forgiven. So, you know, it is healing for the soul. So I'm just very, my heart is very touched that you've been able to do that. And I'm glad for it. And it's just a reminder to me as well, if not a rebuke, that, if, you know, for things that you're carrying around that you do need to let go and forgive for,
yeah,
gotta work on that. So anyway, so with this all being said, Sheila wants to know if you have any contact information for resources if someone is going through an abusive relationship or is trying to escape. Do you have numbers or websites or any place that they can go through to reach out and get the help that they need? Are you aware of any of those resources?
I do not, but if they want to contact me, I would be more than happy to find reputable contacts that would be happy to help.
Very good.
And we'll be posting some on the Midwest Hustle page and RealTalk page, so you guys can be updated, because that's a very good question, and we definitely don't want to lose oversight of that, because like Chris Landez have both said, you know, it's very important, and one of the things that's just so hurtful when we're doing this show is that one of you guys listening is suffering from this already and looking for that ray of sunshine or that hope. And, you know, it doesn't happen by accident. It does take some work, and it's going to be tough. And it's not an easy situation to be in. And like she was talking about, like Krista was talking about with the brainwashing, there is some doubt, there is some fear, and it's been planted there. And either you accept it for what it is, or you say that there's got to be something better than what I'm currently doing. And I hurt. My soul hurts right now. My heart is hurting. And I know this, as bad as it might seem for Crystal, or what, how you might think it might be in view of what Crystal had to deal with, there's someone dealing with this craziness right now. So, you know, be wary, be understanding that, you know, the person that's smiling isn't always happy, and the person that looks like they're doing well is suffering more than you can imagine. So, you know, just reach out to people, and I would beg everyone that's listening to this show, I know you guys are hurting for what's going on with Crystal, but there's someone you know that's going through something like this right now. And I'm not saying you not to trust everybody, but I'm saying be cautious and look around and listen. Listen to people. Don't just talk to them. Listen to them. If they're crying out, you'll hear it, because something is always not quite right in what they're saying. Go ahead, Crystal.
No, and you can also tell on a person's mannerisms. If people stop talking and they start looking and they start paying attention, you can tell in the interaction between people if something's just not right. And you can especially tell with children. A child will shy away. A child will be closed off. You can tell when something's not right. And if you suspect something, you just say something. And, you know, if you said, Kaylin, you know, there's people, and we just need to be, you know, be nice and be mindful. There's always somebody going through something. That should be just the way the world works. We should just be genuinely, you know, with anybody, the stranger coming out of the convenience store, greet everyone with a smile, because you never know what someone's going through. It doesn't mean that we can't have bad days and maybe our tempers are a little short, but if we stop and we think more often than not, then we'll be nicer more often than not, because you never know. Somebody could be going home and getting the crap kicked out of them because they forgot the bread. And, you know, it's just the world's got to get better or we're going to implode, and it starts with us. We can't control what other people do, so it has to start with us and our actions and what we do and how we treat people.
Amen. All right, listener questions rolling in. Shelley wants to know, how did you break the brainwashing cycle that was going on?
I got older, and I started to come into my own. And, you know, when we're little, our ideas are not our ideas. They're our parents' ideas, our parents' politics, our parents' opinions. And as we start to get older, we come into our own, and we have our own thoughts and our own identities. And I just didn't buy into the bullshit. And I started to get a little braver and a little mouthier. And I missed my mother. And as I got older, my father did find my grandmother. So my grandmother was a guiding star for me for a lot of years, and gave me the sense of family that I needed. So I guess I didn't so much break the brainwashing as I just came into my own, and I just got braver. And that gave me the tools that I needed to just break free.
All right. Now, and I know in the next question, when you hear stories of children who grow up in homes of abuse, that they can tend to grow up to be abusers themselves when they become parents. And Brenda wants to know how you stopped that cycle or were able to overcome so that you were a better parent than what your father was to you.
Let me back up. They say everything that a child needs to become the core of who they are, they get by the age of six. I had that with my mother, 6 years. The core of who I was came, the core of who I am came from her. When I had my daughter, I was 18 years old. My child was planned, even though I wasn't married, because I wanted a child to love, and I wanted to be loved unconditionally. So the love that I had for my daughter, I couldn't even imagine hurting her like that. Your child, I mean, you're a mother. You have a son my age, my son's age. Your child is pure love. You look at that little face, and there is nothing more perfect in the world. And I can't even imagine having ever hurt her like that. And my son, I mean, I can't even imagine. I would die for them. I can't imagine ever hurting them. And anybody who would hurt them, if I got my hands on them, I would destroy them. It would be a very slow, torturous death because I would torment someone, whoever hurt my children, if I got my hands on them.
I hear what you're saying.
It would not be, they would want to die. It would not be pleasant. A lot of people don't break the chain. The chain for that was never there for me. I never contemplated. I never even worried about whether I would hurt my children or not because I would continue the cycle. I knew when I became a teenager, I knew what my father was. I knew he was the devil incarnate, and I knew that I didn't want to be him. I knew I didn't want to have any part of him. And I think I successfully accomplished that.
Well, and it sounds like, I mean, it definitely sounds like you have. And I am a parent of three, and they definitely have all those emotions. And I would be lying if I said I understood why adults hurt children like that. I mean, you can kind of understand why adults hurt each other, but not when it's in instances of one that's definitely stronger than the other. I'm just not something I've ever understood. Sometimes you can rationalize that I've never understood it. Very, very real questions and very real answers. So everyone is living up to the real talk tonight. And, we always appreciate that. Next question, Lucy is asking,
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Guys, I honestly, from Des and I, thank you guys for the outpouring. I mean, this is really special because, you know, this is a time usually where people are trying to blame the person that, you know, you could have done something sooner. But I really think you guys are understanding exactly what is going on, even though you can't really contemplate the reasons why. And you know, I'm not going to push these questions because I don't want to understand the mind of a lunatic. I'm just saying the guy's sick, he's crazy, and there's a lot going on in a sickened mind. And when you talk about morals and morality in society, you know, I don't care how good a society is, there's going to be one person that wants to break the mold and go against the grain, and sometimes it's not in a way that's mindful of humanity as a whole. I mean, you're talking about someone that is just broken, and they want to break any and everything around them. And the one place they always start is with the most innocent. And sadly, it's someone that's usually in the youth realm, and there's a lot going on. So, you know, my goodness. The dad is basically irrelevant because it's a sick individual. We're talking about the healing and the getting past that, and that's where the show is going tonight. So, you know, I don't really want to understand where his brain went warped. It would be nice if he could come forward and straighten it out because, you know, I don't want to have my mind twisted up like his was, and I'm sure neither Crystal nor Dez want to do the same. So, you know, we're not going to really deal on the issue of this sickened mind. We're going to deal with how to not become sick like him, and this is where he comes in the healing part. So I'll just throw that out there, and then I'll pass it back to them.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
And honestly, my big message and my whole point for really coming forward with everything, with writing my book, which hopefully will get written at some point, and, you know, with just being able to talk to people on a one-on-one basis, the message, the takeaway message, you're not alone in feeling what you do or thinking how you think. You're not alone in the tragedy. You can talk to other people. You won't be judged. Is one. Forgiveness is another take-home message that I can't even express that one enough. I want people to learn to talk and communicate and know that they're not alone out there. They can forgive. They can have a healthy, productive life. They can have, quote-unquote, normal relationships. And a lot of people go on to have very destructive romantic lives, or they choose these people that just aren't good for them, and sex becomes a tool rather than something that's shared between people that love each other. And that doesn't have to be the case. I really, truly believe if you talk about it, that's the first step in the healing process, even before the forgiveness, because the forgiveness comes later. That people need time to really wrap their brain around that. So just talking about it first. And then one of the big things that I think helped me, I'm not a victim, and I don't want people to feel sorry for me, and I don't want people to tell me I'm so sorry for everything that you went through. I am not a victim. I am a survivor, strong. And I went through something. A lot of people go through things. And that's huge. People that are handicapped, they don't want to be looked at for their disability. People that go through something like this, they don't want to be looked at with that pitiful, I'm so sorry for you look.
True.
We're not victims. We survive. And that's huge also. A lot of people that are still struggling, they see themselves as victims. You're not a victim. You survived it. You didn't ask for it, and you beat it. So now comes the next step of healing, and that's to talk about it. So that's my take-home message.
And I would just take that one step further and say you're not just a survivor, though, but you're an overcomer because you've come to the point now where you're thriving. So I think, you know, that's a part of the process as well when you're overcoming something that's just really tragic and crappy. There's no other way to say it, but I would definitely add overcomer to that list of adjectives. Lucy is wanting to know, does the current climate of women coming out against their abusers give you hope that things are changing for the better?
Yes. I think people, not just women, because men are abused also, but they are less likely to talk about it because it emasculates them. I do. I have a lot of hope. This is a double-edged sword. People come out and they start to talk and they're automatically believed. There does have to be some proof or some something. There are people out there that, oh, well, you pissed me off, so I'm going to say some nasty stuff about you. We have to make sure that the right, I guess what I'm trying to say is we can't just put everybody in jail that comes out with an accuser. We have to make sure of it. So it has to be manpower needs to be put into it, and hours of investigation needs to be put into it so that the right people are going to jail for the right thing. When I was kidnapped, the cops, they went out, they did a little, but they didn't do a lot. I don't know what the protocol was back then. But there were several instances where my father was almost caught and they dropped the ball. But now let's say I'm a woman who was, scorned, and now I want to, say that my boyfriend abused me, but he really didn't. But I'm pissed off and I'm a little psychopath myself. Well, we have to make sure that those people aren't getting, put into jail because somebody just had an axe to grind. And there's definitely ways to do that. But I do have hope. I'm hoping that in the future, women in those situations in the workplace come forward at the time and not years later, because it gives a lot less credibility to their story, especially when we're talking about adults who had the option to say something and just chose not to because the job was more important. Nothing's more important than your body. You can always find another job. I do, to answer the question, I do have hope. I do.
Well, I'm thankful to hear that, but there's certain things, like some of our listeners are shocked. I mean, they're coming to the realization that this is a bikini pro. And I think what they're shocked about is because, the way you present yourself on stage, you would have never, ever thought, that something like this. And I'm glad we're having this show for this very reason, because, it's not picture perfect, but you found a way to make it right and make it a success. And, there's so many backgrounds for the competitors that get on stage. And, you've been to some of the NGA shows. I know you've been to Earl's. And just to hear about some of those transformations, guys, everybody, there's so many backgrounds. There's so many walks of life. And not everybody has that picture-perfect thing. And I'm really blown away that you guys are so surprised, considering so many backgrounds and so many ways of life. Granted, this is awful. I mean, let's be honest. This is just awful that, a child had to go through this. But look at the end result, because she didn't let that define her. And I'm saying that for the very simple fact that we can be better if we so choose. She's not continuing the cycle of abuse, and that's what's amazing, and that's what makes this truly motivational and inspirational. Go ahead, Crystal. I'll let you go.
It's funny. Fitness didn't help me get through my my emotional and my mental recovery, but fitness did help me. I found it 6 years ago. I was very sedate in my lifestyle, very uncomfortable in my own skin. And, the one thing that I've always been very outgoing and very talkative and a little social butterfly, but I was never 100% confident. And that's something that abuse does do to you. But when I found fitness and got into it, it brought me back to who I was in my early 20s as far as that free-spirited girl that I had once been, that knew no fear, and that, huge here-I-am world attitude. And it gave me that back, and I cannot express enough. A lot of people think that, that fitness or competitions, that it's just this very self-absorbed way of life, and it's very selfish. And it is a little selfish, but let me tell you what. It helps people through so many different things in their lives in so many different aspects, whether it's family, personal, romantic relationships, work relationships, how you treat individual strangers that you come across just in your daily life. And it affects it all in a positive manner. So my fitness life and the rest of my life, it balances itself so very well.
Good.
Physical, being into fitness, whether you're on stage or not, it is very much not just a physical health benefit, but a mental and emotional one as well. And I would definitely recommend anybody who's not very motivated to get into the gym or go hiking or something, do it. It'll save your life.
Very therapeutic, yes.
Exactly, yeah, what she said. What she said. All right, guys, last question for the night. So, Crystal, I feel like you've kind of already answered this maybe a little bit, but I want to go ahead and put this out there. You've already said that, you know, people have to earn your trust before you give it versus the other way around, which is the way a lot of us operate. We trust until you lose that privilege. Brent wants to know, how long did it take you to get to the point where you were even going to give people the opportunity to earn your trust?
When I became a mother. So 18. I was alone basically when I had my daughter. And I didn't have a lot of family around. So I didn't have a lot of support. And as a young mother, you're lacking in a lot of things. It's the one downfall of having children young. You're not really prepared. So I had to try to trust somebody. And that's when I started. But it was very slow going. And to this day, at any one given point in time, I could probably count on one hand at any given point in time in my life how many people I trust. And trust is different than how many people I would trust with my life.
There you go, yeah. Well said.
There's not a lot of people in my life that I trust. And there's probably two that I would trust with my life. And nobody that I trust with my children. yeah. And I don't really consider that a bad thing in this world. This world has gone in a direction that I am ashamed to have given to my children. And I would really like to see it change. And I've taught my children that trust shouldn't come easily. And I know a lot of people might see that as the wrong thing, but
no,
you have to give your kids the tools that they need for the world they live in, and that's the world that we live in. So I have a soft heart. It does beat. I'm just more cautious. I try to keep my circle small and people that I know that have good hearts too. And, you know, those that don't, I just try to keep at a distance.
And there you have it. And just one last time, Crystal, because we are at that dreaded point in the show where we are going to have to start to say goodbye, but you did present the opportunity for folks to reach out to you one-on-one if they're in a precarious situation and need someone to to talk to or reach out to, how can people find you?
So my email is Crystal, C-R-Y-S-T-A-L, B as in boy, Woods, W-O-O-D-S, @gmail.com. I'm all over social media. I recently changed my Instagram to Rights and Weights. They can find me there. They can Facebook message me, Crystal Woods. I'm more than happy to talk to anybody. Sometimes the person that's outside of your world is the easiest one that you can talk to, and
yes,
that helps a lot. And I'm more than happy to look for local, you know, places that people can go to. If someone's looking tonight and needs to talk, I'm more than open to answer any questions. And their local areas, if you contact a crisis center or a counseling center, they will help. They will talk. They're not there to judge. And I also do highly recommend support groups, because those people themselves have actually gone through it. I find people, it's easier for you to talk to someone who has been through it themselves versus speaking to a counselor who has not gone through it. They don't understand. Well, they can empathize, but they haven't been through it. So support groups are huge, because you can talk and you can, you know, get another perspective and understanding and a shoulder to lean on. And I think that's a really good thing to have.
Well, you know, I just want to add this, and this is not a question. This is just kind of a thank you, and more like a humble way. You've humbled a lot of listeners, but I think Kyle said it best. And he says, you know, after celebrating Christmas and all the food and festivities, even arguing with the family doesn't seem to matter much now, since we've learned what Christmas can be for someone who doesn't get to even know what Christmas is about. So thank you for sharing that. You've humbled me, and you've made me look at my kids a lot better and a lot closer, and I'll be having this conversation with them tonight.
That's awesome.
Amen to that. So, you know, I can't say it much better than what Kyle said, other than to say just thanks again, Crystal, for taking time out of your schedule 2 weeks in a row to share with our listeners, and especially really to share the story. It is the holidays, and this is definitely a story of, I would say, hope. And a lot of glad tidings have come out of it. So still, you know, a lot to be thankful for, grateful for, and uplifted with. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you for having me and letting me share just a little bit and, you know, get it out there. The more that people see someone talk, maybe the more other people will talk.
Amen.
That can be the hope. Thank you. Man, guys, if that's not temple building, I don't know what is.
I don't either.
We've come across some very amazing stories. But you know the thing, the thread that seems to tie all of these things together is, you know, we've had people on the show sharing things that they've gone through, and they've all turned it around. I'm not saying that happens 100%. Praise the Lord. There are examples out there of how you can turn tragedy into something that can bring happiness, or where you can be happy and still live, and not just live, but thrive. And I am just grateful for those examples, because we all hit bumps day in, day out, day long sometimes, and we're asking ourselves, what the heck? What the heck?
Yes.
What is this really for? But there is always something more beyond the circumstances that may have us bogged down at the moment. And I'm thankful for those reminders and these examples that we've been blessed to be able to share with so many.
Amen. What she said.
Amen. So, loving you guys out there, hoping you feel particularly blessed. And on behalf of Kaylin, Crystal, myself, and the boys from P4P Muscle, your body is a temple. So let's build it.